Hi, I'm Jess Shukla. I run for the University of Toronto and I run to clear my head.
I just wanted to pop in before the originally scheduled content to acknowledge that June 2020 is proving to be a historical moment for the Black Lives Matter movement in fighting racial injustice and transphobic violence. You've probably heard of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and George Floyd, just three of the many Black lives lost too soon in connection to police, but you likely have not heard of Monica Diamond, Nina Pop, and Tony McDade, unfortunately, to only name a few of the Black trans lives lost in the past few months. Look up their stories, say their names, and understand who they are and what happened to them. To commemorate the Stonewall riots of 1969, June also stands as LGBTQ+ Pride Month. A common theme of this podcast is stressing the importance of mental health care while breaking down stigmas and barriers in the process. For these reasons, I'm fundraising for the National Queer and Trans Therapists of Color Network's Mental Health Fund. This org works on decolonizing mental health care services to better address intergenerational and systemic trauma for healing oppressed communities and strengthening resistance and social justice movements. From now until the end of June, I will be releasing three more episodes featuring Juniper Eastwood, The Drop Twins, and Nia Akins, and will then take a break from podcasting. For the remainder of this season, I pledge to contribute $5 for every new donation that a listener of this podcast makes to NQTTCN. You can send me confirmation of your donation either through Instagram DM at Marcos Haley or email haleyb.marcos@gmail.com. I will contribute up to a total of $100 of my own savings. If you have time to listen to this episode, you also have some time to pause this episode right now, take a look at the resources in the episode description, including an awesome podcast with the founder of NQTTCN, sign some petitions, donate if you can, and then resume listening to this conversation with Jazz as she discusses her own experiences during the pandemic, engaging in the process of eating disorder recovery, and her experiences as a world-class Canadian runner and woman of color. So pause right now. Now, show up for each other, take care, and thank you for listening to this rather extensive interlude. Now here's Jazz. Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Triple Knot, a podcast for collegiate runners to share their stories, celebrate their accomplishments, and open up conversation around the challenges we may face as young athletes. So I'm your host, Haley, and today's guest is Jazz Shukla out of Toronto, the birthplace of a well-known guy, Drake. That's not relevant, but anyways, Jazz owns a blazing 204 800 PR that she set as a silver medalist at the U20 Pan Am Games in 2017. In 2016, she also ran for Team Canada at the World U20 Championships in the 800 and was on the bronze medal winning 4x4. And yeah, not going to lie, don't know much about the distance running system in Canada, but she owns the Ontario University Athletics OUA record in the 600 130 and ran a 246 1000 at the same meet. So she also runs cross country and they do the 8k, which is insane to me. She has three top 20 finishes at the OUA championships. So anyway, she is wicked fast, versatile at all those distances, and is calling in today. So welcome to Jazz.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what's been up with you this past week? We were talking a little bit before about you working at your mom's flower shop, but I'm wondering what's been the best part of your week, the hardest part of your week, and something that you're looking forward to coming up.
Honestly, the best part of my week this week, my friend and I on Monday, we drove about an hour outside of the city to this conservation area, and we went on a really long run in the forest. We got completely lost.
And so we ran for like 20 minutes longer than we planned on running, but it was so beautiful. It was so hot. And then we showered in the waterfall after. And it was like, yeah, it was just such a good day. It's like one of those days that reminds you, you know, why running is just like a great pastime, especially when we're all stuck in the house so often. And sometimes you feel like you have to get out and run and it just doesn't feel great. So it was nice to just like reconnect with why I do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so magical, especially right now as the temps get warmer and everyone's still you're stuck in the city with the virus going on too.
Yeah, it's been really hard to run in the city. Like I happen to live about a 2-minute run from a trail that goes from the lake shore all the way through the city. And it's really beautiful. It's usually a great place to run, but it's been really busy because everyone's kind of taken up running as their new quarantine hobby. So I was actually, there were a few weeks where I just couldn't run. I took about 3 weeks off because it was just too busy and I'm asthmatic. So I'm always a little nervous just getting too close to people. I know that I'm more vulnerable. So
yeah, that's fair. That sounds like an added challenge to an already challenging time for sure.
Yeah, it's been interesting, but it's been nice to just get out of the city every once in a while and go on some explore runs.
Yeah, this is a great time too to take those needed breaks that I feel like you often don't get with a schedule that's so packed between cross country, track, and then like summer training for cross country.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, because our coaches are starting to think that we won't have a cross country season in the fall. So that was kind of one of those things where the minute I heard that, I started thinking, okay, so maybe the next time I race won't be until January. Maybe it won't be until like April. So at that point, you just kind of have to think about staying healthy and like not burning out and just hope that you can get to that point, you know, in good shape and able to race. I mean, the worst thing I can do is not take 3 weeks off. The worst thing I could do at this point is just run myself into the ground and get sick or injured. So
for sure. That's been the buzz here too. The fall going to be like, who knows?
And no one has any idea. Yeah.
It's been a very like school by school, conference by conference decision. Exactly. Teams are cutting men's track and field and cross country right now in the NCAA. So that's
just the men.
Generally because of Title IX reasons.
Oh, right.
They cut multiple sports, and it will be like one like women's equestrian or something. So then they end up men's track and cross country. So that's been a big uproar lately.
Oh my goodness. I had no idea. That's awful.
Yeah. And then to compensate for football having such a huge roster too. So what's been the most challenging part of your week and something that you're looking forward to?
I think, honestly, I've been doing hills with my teammate. Well, she's in our training group. She's not in our training group, but she runs the 400. She's an Olympian and she's very fast. She's got way more speed than I do, especially because I'm just in base season. And we've been doing hills in the river valley near my house. And she lives about a mile away from me. And it's probably a 200 meter hill and it's really steep. And I tried to do this workout on my own once and I got through two intervals and then I decided that I was clearly too tired for it and went home. But when I'm with her, I do 12 and we like get through it and it's awful. It feels awful, but it's one of those things that I know makes me stronger. And I know it's so nice to like be with another person and be training with another person. So it's hard, but it's good hard, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And that's interesting too, because you're maybe a little more distancey than she is, but they're like sprint, but also they take that stamina, that endurance runner.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Like every interval, she'll drop me at the start. And then by the end, I start catching her and then I pull her through the end. And so it has been a really good working relationship this little quarantine period when we've been able to meet up, stay 6 feet apart, and just run up this huge hill. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to getting back into group training. We're just starting to reopen some track facilities, stuff like that. So the coaches are starting to talk about us training in small groups again. And that'll be really nice to just be able to do a tempo with friends, because it feels so much harder when you're on your own. So it's been, you know, just taking everything one day at a time, but I'm definitely looking forward to running with some real humans again and not just listening to podcasts.
Are you guys having to wear masks when you run?
No, not necessarily. I don't think it's required that we wear masks. Some people do. I have a KN95 mask that I wear when I go out in public. So it's the same grade as an N95 mask, but it's not certified for use in North America. So that you're not taking them out of the healthcare supply chain. But you can't run in it because it is a respirator type mask. So sometimes I'll just run with a buff over my face, stuff like that, and just put it over when I'm passing people. But I think for workouts, it might be a little hard to do with the mask on. It's also really hot here. So I don't know Fahrenheit, but it's hot. I promise you, it's very warm. I think it would have probably been in the 90s for a couple of days.
Wow.
So it's cooled down now, but I wouldn't have been able to run with a mask, and I'm not sure if that's realistic. We'll see, though.
Like, it's like mimicking altitude and humidity.
Yeah, it's awful. You're rebreathing your own breath, too. And sometimes, like, by the end of a run, like, I just don't want to smell what my breath smells like. And it's like, I have to. And it's awful. I've never been so conscious of what my breath smells like. And it's just for me. It's not even for anyone else. I just have to smell it now.
You know, I'm glad to hear I'm not alone in that, because when I've been wearing masks lately, I'm like, is this what my, I brush my teeth. Is this what my breath?
Yeah. Like, I don't know if it's the mask material or if it's me, but my breath smells really bad all the time, turns out. So
I'm blaming it on the mask material. So
yeah, I'm like, oh, it must be the material, must have some weird spray on it that just smells awful.
So what's your backstory, Jazz? How did you get your start as a runner?
So my mom used to be a 400 runner. And then she broke her foot when she was in grade 12 in high school, and it never healed right. So she never really ran, just never really sprinted again, but she started doing a lot of long distance running. So when I was a kid, she would take me to the cinder track by our house, and she would do intervals, and I just like do part of them with her. And that was the first time I ever really got introduced to like running as a sport. But in the fourth grade is the first time we have the chance to run distances longer than 100 meters at a meet. So I tried out for the longest events because I thought, if I'm not very fast, like at least no one will want to run these, so I'll probably make the team. And so I ran the 1500 and the 800. I beat all the boys at the tryout, and it felt so good that I've never, ever thought about running a different event ever again. So 1500 and 800, grade 4 to 4th year university. But yeah, I was actually a ballet dancer growing up. And in grade 10, I quit running to do ballet more seriously. But I really missed my friends. The running team was so supportive in a way that dance is. I just felt like my experience was that it was a little bit more competitive and a little bit more cold than running. So I missed my friends. I called my coach in grade 11 and I begged him to take me with them to club provincials. And he said, sure, just this is when the bus is leaving, get on the bus. And I had such a fun weekend that I just decided to run. And so, you know, I've been at the same club ever since.
Wow.
I've been at the same club since grade eight, which is kind of when everyone started training. And I felt like I was the only one that wasn't training. So my mom sent me to the closest club, which happened to be the University of Toronto Track Club. And yeah, it's just worked out really well for me. So I've been there ever since.
That's a really neat story. Do you feel, I actually did ballet for 9 years, not seriously.
Did you?
I did, yeah. Do you feel like it helped you with strength and injury prevention?
I honestly feel like it did. At the time, I thought it wasn't helping me because I was actually too flexible. So I'd get these weird hamstring injuries because my hamstrings would just go in every direction. And I was like hypermobile. So I would just like be moving weirdly. But now that I've got absolutely no dance strength left, I've realized that it gave me this like core strength and hip stability that I lost over time. So I've actually started doing a lot more dance inspired like exercise and Pilates type exercise, especially during this quarantine period, because I've had so much time, just to kind of get that strength back. And I actually think it's really helped. Like, I feel like I'm a lot more stable. I'm a lot more fluid, and I can feel that like my shoulders have come down and I'm less tense. And I just feel like it's a really good foundation for just like understanding how your body moves. Mm-hmm. That you don't necessarily get through a lot of other sports because you don't have to think about it as much, because dance is about it both being feasible for your body to do something and also looking good while doing it. You have to think about the placement a lot. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's helped.
Yeah, I totally felt like it gave me a really strong foundation for sense of body awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I've noticed the one thing everyone always says, because I have a really big back kick, and so I kick people a lot, and sometimes they'll like clip my leg when it's at the back of my kick, and I'll get into these really weird falling positions, but I never actually go down. I'll like manage to like pull my body back before I hit the ground, and I honestly think that's a dance thing, because it's like you feel that you're falling and your body just automatically corrects itself.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's a dance thing or if that's just a weird me being a generally clumsy person and having to get used to it thing, but I like to think that it's a dance thing.
Gives you a competitive advantage kicking people. No.
Yeah, you know what? We were just talking about Gabriella. She probably has a scar from this. I've spiked her in the arm so many times because that's how high my leg goes up. She's only a couple of inches shorter than me, but my leg goes up past my waist and it kicks her in the arm. And wow. I'm just out of control. I'm the worst person to run behind.
It's like, what happened? Oh, I got spiked. in your like,
yeah, I'm really bad for spiking people because my legs, they're very long and they just do things that I'm not entirely in control of.
So it sounds like you've been a part of the University of Toronto club team for a really long time, as you said. So how did you end up choosing to study there? Was that just like a natural progression? Tell me that story.
It was a natural progression because I got to stay with my coach, who'd been my coach Terry Rodchenko. He's been my personal coach since I was 12 or 13, so we're going on 10 years of him coaching me, which is a really special thing that I think you kind of only get in Canada because of the club system, and because you can train with university aged athletes and their coaches when you're younger. But I didn't really start taking track seriously and training seriously until grade 12. I would show up to practice, but I never did my long runs. I would never, you know, I never did any of the other things that you're supposed to do when you're not at practice. I would just show up and do the workouts. So I didn't really, I think the first time I ever did a long run was probably after the summer after grade 11. I got really, really close with this girl on the team who was very serious. Like, she loved doing mileage. So I would go on runs with her. And that was when I started kind of doing my long runs for real. And so I didn't really ever think about going down to the States because it just wasn't in the cards for me. Like, I had run in grade 9 and then I didn't run in grade 10 and then I ran in grade 11, but I wasn't really training seriously. So grade 12 is kind of when things started to come together. And at that point, it was already too late to really think about that seriously. So it was between a few schools in Canada, but in the end, staying with my coach was kind of the deciding factor. And I think it's been a good decision. We have, like, he really understands me as an athlete because he's coached me for so long. And so we can have honest discussions about what is working, what's not working. And yeah, he's always really receptive. He really takes care of us. And so I feel like really blessed for that. we all call him our second dad. He's like, he takes care of us on and off the track. He's the first person to check up on you during exams, make sure you're doing well. Like, he'll ask, you know, how I slept, what I've eaten. He always brings fruit gummies to meets, for, you know, if you need a little bit of sugar right before you race. So he'll just toss us a pack of Scooby snacks and we eat those. Yeah. So, you know, like, a relationship like that doesn't come around very often. So when you get a coach who just understands you like that, you kind of, it's great. It's like great if you can stay with them. So
the fruit gummies are a big hit on my team as well.
Yeah, they're so good. He always has snacks in his bag and it's just like, oh, like, what's in the bag today? Yeah.
So do you think that, because it seems like you've been competing at a really high level for a while, do you think that not taking the sport more seriously until grade 12 and having that long-term coaching relationship has been sort of your key to longevity as a distance runner?
I think so. I think a lot of girls, especially up here, there's kind of like a curse we talk about where you run really fast in grade 10 and then it kind of never happens again for you. Mm-hmm. And that's really common. In grade 10, I wasn't running, so I was definitely not running very fast. Mm-hmm. So I think I avoided that kind of overtraining when I was younger because I did not train at all. So it's definitely helped because I feel like I have like a long way to go. Like, there's a lot more training I could be doing even now that I feel like if I'd started earlier, then maybe I would be feeling a little bit burnt out or there wouldn't be much farther I could push my body. Whereas I've had a coach who really, really puts our health first. So every time we have any type of injury, he's getting us on the elliptical. We're not running, we're not training. And he's very big on us getting out of college and into post-collegiate running healthy, happy, still running fast. And so when that's the number one goal, I think it makes it a lot easier to just trust him and trust his training and just like keep going. And usually it does work out for people, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely have a similar thing. Like, there used to be the Foot Locker curse and it was like, yeah, any high school girl that wins nationals is not, yeah, nationals in college sort of thing.
We have a similar thing with OFSA, which is it's like states, I guess, but it's the second biggest meet after Arcadia in North America. So, and that's my province. So it's a big deal. It's the type of thing where if you win OFSA, you could get a full ride off of just having one OFSA cross country, stuff like that. And there's this thing everyone talks about in cross country where if you win OFSA as a midget girl, you'll never win again. And that's what we just call the OFSA curse. It's been broken a few times, but especially by Cameron Ormond, who I don't know if you know who she is, but she won OFSA all 4 years of high school and she's still running really well. She's a very talented 3K runner. So there's definitely exceptions to the rule, but there's definitely that worry about just peaking too early. And especially because in most cases, your coaches aren't telling you to train that much. So you're kind of going off on your own. So obviously a 15-year-old should not be writing their own training plan. That's definitely one of the pitfalls that people fall into sometimes.
Yeah. There's so much pressure around wanting to succeed and compete at a high level. And then,
yeah,
you know, if you haven't gone through puberty yet, you need to get
over
to when your body develops and changes.
Yeah.
A really hard, not just physical, but mental block when performances plateau.
Absolutely. And especially as a girl, like, your body changes and it's a shock. You don't, because you know you've been looking one way and running well looking that way, and it can be really damaging to feel like you look different and you're running different. And it's really easy to make that connection between how your body has changed physically and how you're running. And in some ways, it's like, yes, you hit puberty, a lot of things have changed in your body, but it's not because you've gained weight. And that's one of those things where it's just a really slippery slope, I think, for a lot of girls especially. in the sport.
Yeah, and as you said, when you were younger, you were beating all the boys, and then suddenly you just can't keep up with guys like you used to when you were younger.
Yeah.
It's also kind of a sad thing.
It is a sad thing. It was really nice to beat the boys. They hated it. Yep. And now I wish I could, but I cannot.
And
for my boyfriend, he quit running, so I can still... I dropped him on the tempo a few weeks ago, and it felt fantastic.
Nice. Got to have that male figure in your life that you can just and everything. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for me too, I felt like I had an idea in my head that you went through puberty in high school and then like that was kind of it, but your body keeps changing in college. Like it's...
Absolutely.
You know, and like there's no cutoff time. There's
Your body never stops changing fundamentally. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't weigh myself because I had an eating disorder when I was in high school. So that's one of those things that I just don't do. But I know that I've gained a lot of weight in college, and we all talk about it. We've all gained weight, but we're stronger, we're more powerful. And all the weight I've gained is basically muscle. And that's one of those things that no one really tells you to look out for. No one really explains that to you. It's one of those things you end up learning on your own, but I wish that people would tell high school girls that more often, because you think that, you know, you think that high school is the Olympics. Like you think that if you win your provincials or you win, you think if you win OFSA that you've peaked, and you think that's the most important thing. But then like looking back on it, I don't understand why I was so stressed about these races. It's like, it really wasn't a big deal. It was just a race. And now I don't get that stress for races that are just as big. I just don't get as stressed. It's just, I know that it's just a meet at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah. And also gaining some body fat too does help strengthen your bones. That's another.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's crazy because everyone talks about gaining weight as if it's a bad thing, but it's really, really helpful for running. Like you need to be strong enough to run longer, run faster, lift heavier, all those things you need to gain weight for from what you weighed in high school. And girls are so scared of gaining weight that they don't, but no one's, because no one's telling them unless you have that like older figure that can sit you down and say, listen, this is a good thing.
So for you, how did you over, you said that you dealt with an eating disorder when you were older. How did you overcome that? And what was your source of gaining health and in accepting your changing body and finding love in racing without attaching your identity to winning again?
Yeah. So I've had a lot of things that have forced me to see myself as more than a runner, more than even just a fast runner. So when I had an eating disorder, I was anorexic but this was while I was not running. So I was in dance. And as much as I have a classical runner's body, I guess, I don't have a dancer's body. So I was constantly being told that I was too muscular. I was too big to be lifted as a dancer. And so there was a lot of pressure to lose weight. I felt that I was too big. And so I ended up just going down that path, and I ended up being hospitalized and having to, you know, get serious help to get back to just going through life normally and not constantly thinking about my weight, my food intake, stuff like that. And I think getting away from dance was really valuable for me. I was lucky enough that I could have a fresh start in a sport that I already knew and loved. Mm-hmm. And I've been lucky enough to not feel that pressure, especially from my teammates and coaches. There's absolutely the opposite pressure. We are constantly, as a team, focused on making sure everyone is eating enough, understands that that is not at all one of the goals of our team. And yeah, if we see anyone struggling, we definitely will all make a concerted effort to talk to them about it. And so it's just been really helpful to have that support system in place, to always know that there's someone I can go talk to if I'm struggling at all. And so that's been really, really great. My captain when I started at U of T. She's since graduated, but yeah, she was really, really great about always just reminding me to refocus if that was what I was focusing on, to just refocus and like reframe the way I was thinking about things. But yeah, I don't know. I'm a big proponent of therapy. I think everyone should have someone to talk to. And if that person is someone who has gone to school and learned strategies that can help you, all the better. But besides seeking professional help, I think people should always be open about their own experiences with, well, if they feel comfortable. I don't think everyone needs to be open. I understand some people don't want to be, but if possible, just like talking to, you know, the younger athletes that you train with, just having a really open conversation, having a really open environment so that people know that if they're struggling, there's people they can reach out to is really, really important. And I think that that's what's helped me the most. And so I hope that as I become an upperclassman on the team, that we're continuing to encourage those types of open discussions with the younger girls. And that's like all you can ask for, honestly, because unfortunately we're not all professionals. So it's just counteracting the social pressures and the societal pressures that make young girls feel like they need to be skinny in order to run fast, and just letting them know that that's not at all the case. And, you know, our entire team is a testament to that. And we all have had to craft a healthy relationship with food in order to be able to do this sport. And I just think it's the most important thing. It's the foundation of everything you do. If you're not eating properly, if you're not sleeping properly, then nothing else really works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, first of all, that's so awesome that you have that healthy team environment around like a non-eating disorder culture on your team. That's so important. And yeah, thank you for sharing your story about it too, because it is really hard to talk about. It brings back a lot of the struggle that you went through, but it's so important for people to hear and is part of us breaking down that culture in
runs. Absolutely. It's something that I feel like I'm very comfortable talking about because I think it's important to talk about it if you're able. Mm-hmm. But even just now, I mean, to be completely honest with you, ever since quarantine started, there's been so much content on social media about gaining quarantine weight and like keeping off quarantine weight and all of that. And it actually has been really triggering for me. Like I started noticing myself restricting in a way that I have not been doing since I was much, much younger. Oh, here comes my dog. And it's been a learning experience. It's just been easy. It's so easy to think that that sort of mindset and that period of your life is in the past and that you can just leave it there. But it's a good reminder that there's always these things come and go in waves, and there's always going to be things that to a certain extent trigger existing issues. And so I've been trying to be really open with people about struggling with that in the past little while, because it has been an issue and I've had to work hard and literally force myself to eat more food before I run and after I run and all of that stuff, because just being constantly bombarded with those types of messages does get in your head. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of what starts you down that path, and it's a long and deep rabbit hole if you go down it. So I'm glad I've been able to kind of catch myself before I went into it again. But, you know, I'm keeping an eye out for everyone, because not everyone has had as much support and ability to kind of recognize their behaviors are harmful. So
yeah, that's definitely where the therapy experience comes back in, is it's a constant recovering. And if you have been able to learn those habits and recognize those behaviors in yourself, when you hit another challenging period in your life, it's going to help you overcome that again.
Absolutely. It's just about developing healthy coping strategies for stressful times. And this is a very stressful time. And if you really haven't developed concrete coping strategies for like, even just something as simple as like waking up first thing in the morning, going for a run, is so hard when you feel like your day has no structure and it's very easy to slip into those unhealthy coping habits, like, you know, procrastinating or under eating or anything like that, even, you know, binge eating, just bad things that don't make you feel good. And yeah, it's harder than ever because we're all isolated, which is already damaging. And your day is just kind of this blob of amorphous time. And so it's hard. And it's been a test, to be honest. But there's Siri. But you know what? I think it's been good to be able to rely on people, even if it's over Zoom or over FaceTime. It's harder to be vulnerable in those kinds of situations, but it's a skill I think we're all kind of developing. And then it's like maybe even easier to be vulnerable in person once you've gotten over the weirdness of doing it through a screen, if that makes sense.
Yeah. The media consumption right now in general is unavoidable, and it's really hard to take everything in.
It's really hard. Yeah, there's so much. I mean, in the last couple of days, oh my God. I mean, that video of George Floyd is everywhere, and it is horrifying, and I cannot stop seeing it, and I just deleted every social media app off my phone today because I cannot see it anymore.
Yeah, it really sucks too that that's what it has taken for people to recognize that.
I know.
Them is still prevalent and police brutality
ingrained
in the state structure. So let's completely shift gears for a second.
Absolutely. So
you're a woman of color yourself.
Yes.
How does that present itself in your running or like in your environment as a distance runner?
Well, distance running is a weird sport because in North America, it's very white dominated. But in the rest of the world, it's very much not. I happen to be Jamaican, which is weird. I'm half Jamaican, half Indian, which is being a Jamaican distance runner is also odd. But a lot of people think I'm Ethiopian. So that kind of evens it out because that's very much not odd. But I'm not. So it's been interesting because for the most part, you're in a very white circle. But I think because, if this makes sense, because I've grown up in a very white neighborhood and I went to a pretty white school, you know, I feel like it's almost par for the course for me. I've never felt out of place in the distance running community at all, which I feel very lucky about. I feel like it hasn't really affected my experience of running at all, at least not to an extent that I felt it. So I think in that respect, I've been pretty lucky, but I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, last night I had a nightmare that my brother got choked by someone's knee. And then this morning I woke up and I was exhausted and I had to go on a run. And it's one of those moments where like you get on your run and you're just alone with your thoughts and it sucks. But it's a thing that I can't erase and I can't take away from myself. I can't just, like, my Blackness isn't something that I get to ignore. So in times where there's so much unrest and so much uncertainty about, you know, what is going on, there's people rioting, there's people, you know, protesting at our, not state house, but the equivalent at our, at Queens Park, which is our Capitol building. I mean, yeah, it's a weird time to be just going about your life as normal, to be going to work and to be coming home and going on a run. It feels very weird.
Even though it hasn't been a barrier for you to actually running and succeeding as a runner, it's just a part of who you are that, as you said, you can't escape it. And it's just like takes away that mental energy that does go into running.
Absolutely. And I mean, a lot of people are brokenhearted about this, angry, upset. not just Black people, but when you feel like it could be someone you care about, someone you saw grow up, someone who's in your family, it feels very raw and it's a very hard emotion to process. It's just this lump, like this fear and this, like, I don't know, there's just something about that photo that really got to me. It felt like if you had to walk past that reminder every day, you go through your life differently.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been, I've had a lot of mixed feelings about how white people are handling this and just social media presence, because it's like, I don't know if people always consider how triggering that might be to see those images. And like, you know, we can come home at the end of the day and we don't have to think about being Black, but if you're like constantly bombarding other people with like all this media about this is what you should be doing, like, I don't know, it's still really draining.
Yeah. And the thing about being in a mostly white social circle, partially because of running, mm-hmm. is that because of that, I feel like there's been a lot more of those, like, if you're white, you need to watch this video. And I watched one of these videos this morning just because I was curious what it was. And I don't know if you've seen this. It's the video on The Cut. It's like a series of parents talking to their kids about interactions with the police. Mm. And it opens on this girl. She's 8. She puts her hands up. She goes, they're rehearsing. My name is Ariel. I don't remember her last name. I'm 8 years old, I'm unarmed, and I don't have anything that can hurt you. And she looks about 5 years old, and it's just a heartbreaking video because that's not something an 8-year-old should be trained to say. And I look at that and I know that that's a conversation that my parents have had with my brother. It's a conversation they've had with me. It's something you carry around with you. And it's hard because I want all the white people in my social circle to be sharing these resources and taking them in and doing the work. But it's hard for me to constantly see it because the types of things a Black person is sharing about this and the types of thing a white person is sharing about this are very different because they just have different lived experiences and different levels of tolerance for watching Black pain play out repeatedly. So it's just been one of those things where I just had to take a step back and kind of, you know, sign the petitions, do everything I can, donate, and then say, okay, I'm not going to consume any more of this because at this point I'm just hurting myself and I'm not actually accomplishing anything. Whereas for other people, consuming that might be really valuable and I recognize that, but I just don't want to. So I've just shut myself off from that for now because it's just not doing me any favors at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really important to be able to make that distinction of what's healthy for you and what's not.
Yeah.
So has there been any talk in Canada about diversifying the running community? Is that like a conversation?
Not that I've heard of. We do have a pretty diverse group, I'll be honest. I mean, I can't speak for every program talks about or the specific makeup of any program's training group, but our program is very, very, very diverse. I mean, we're in a very diverse city. So we have people from all types of different backgrounds, all types of different ethnic backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds in our group. So it is important, I think, to just see other perspectives than your own all the time, whenever you can. I think it's important to deliberately expose yourself to those perspectives, but I also think it's nice when you make a personal connection with someone and you feel their humanity and then you hear about their different experiences through that. So I think it's an important thing. I'm not sure if it's an official conversation that's being had, but I would say that Canadian track and field is surprisingly diverse because Canada's, you know, surprisingly diverse.
I think running, for me, my favorite thing about running is how it connects me to other people. And
absolutely.
Exposure to people from different backgrounds, having that diversity just really allows you to connect with other people in a different way and grow as a person and runner.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is completely switching gears again.
Yeah, let's go back.
We've talked about some of the challenges that you've overcome in your running. What have been some of your most memorable opportunities and accomplishments as a runner?
Honestly, the one memory that I'll always cherish is in 2018, our team won our national cross country championships. It was the first year that it was 8K. And we are a team of mostly middle distance runners. So most of us run the 600 and the 1K or also the 1500. So we're not a distance team. And so we definitely came in as the underdogs. I think everyone expected us to come second. We knew we could win if we held it together. And everything kind of went right that day. It was like pouring rain. We were covered in mud, and it was the most wonderful moment. Like, it felt like the entire year had gone into this. We weren't sure if it was going to happen. And then when it finally, found out that we'd won, it's one of those moments that you can't put into words. It's so special to win something like that as a team and know that every single person worked so hard to get to that point. And so I treasure that more than any individual accomplishment. You know, it means way more to me. That's the medal I have, you know, hanging near my bed. Like, that's always the one that I go to when I'm thinking about my favorite moments in the sport. But also, I would say the biggest opportunity I've ever gotten was the opportunity to go to World Juniors, because I only really started training in grade 12, and that's the year I made Worlds. And it was one of those years where at the start of the year, I knew there was a World Juniors, but I didn't ever even consider that I could be on the team. And then by the end of the qualification period, about a week before, I had made the team, and I just had to hold on to the spot. And then you get to Worlds, and I'm ranked second last in my heat. There's like three rounds. I'm ranked second last in my heat. I'm ranked like 31st overall. And I'm just thinking, you know what? There's nothing to lose here. I might as well just try the PB and just do the best I can. And it was a great opportunity because all the races were fast. They were, you know, very tactical, physical. It was an opportunity to like learn how people race at a high level that I feel like I wouldn't have been exposed to otherwise. And it was a really surprisingly low pressure situation. The entire process was so much less stressful than OFSA, which is the most stressful race for anyone. And then you get to Worlds and everything's so calm. And, you know, you're just going out there and you're just going to run your best. And if you don't make it through, that's fine. You weren't supposed to anyways. But yeah, so that was the best opportunity because I got to PB twice and just get all this gear and come home. And it was so fun. You meet all these people from around the country and around the world. And it makes you way more invested in the sport. Like, junior teams are a special thing, I think, because everyone's a little bit too young to have started taking everything super seriously yet, but old enough that they understand that this is like a great opportunity. So it's just a really good environment, and it taught me a lot and it inspired me a lot. I met a lot of people that have, you know, become close friends, and it inspired me to keep going in the sport. It gave me a new type of fire to compete.
That's so cool. What was the moment of qualifying for that race like? Because you said that you weren't expecting it. So what was the actual qualification like?
So the way our qualification worked is you had to be ranked in the top two in the country. Mm-hmm. There was no trials. So the way I ran my qualification time was actually at this very small meet. It's a twilight meet in Hamilton, which is just about an hour outside of Toronto. And it was very quiet, very, you know, not a big deal race. Got paced through the 400, PB'd in, I believe, 207 at that time. And I knew I'd qualified immediately, but there was still about a week and a half left in the qualification period. So I was terrified that another girl was going to just jump me in the rankings. And then the last day of the qualification period was the club provincial championships. And I was in the 800 and my job was to make it as slow as possible so that no one would be able to beat me. And I've never been so happy to run like a 211 in my entire life. Wow. I cannot tell you how slow that first lap was, but it was definitely over 70 seconds. And I have no regrets about it. It was the best slow race I've ever run. It was the best feeling ever.
So did you take control of that race to hold the pace back?
Yes. I think a lot of the girls in the race kind of knew that I was in a qualifying spot. So I think I was the one to beat in that race. And that was kind of my first experience being the one to beat, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I got to the front of the race. I went out fast and then slowed it right down. And it's a wonderful feeling to be in control of a race. It's insane. It's like this feeling of power. I mean, it's really nice. It was really nice. And I felt like the entire time I knew what I had to do and I just got it done.
Yeah.
And that was the first time where it really clicked that like, oh, like this is the thing I'm kind of starting to become good at. This whole running thing.
Yeah, to be able to just execute a plan like that, I feel like is a pretty rare situation. And to know that coaches are probably telling their athletes like, hey, this is the girl to look out for, like this is the one.
Absolutely. And there was another girl in the race who had run faster than me the year before, so I knew she would be a concern for sure. And so my job was just to make sure that the race was slow, which is a nice job to have because you don't have to physically exert yourself as much. But it's definitely like one of the first times where we had a very specific plan for a race. Usually I go into a race kind of knowing what I'm supposed to go through the first split in, and then it's kind of, you know, however it plays out. But that was the first time where my coach ever told me exactly what to do at every point in the race. And yeah, there's a feeling of mastery that comes with executing a plan that I hadn't really experienced before in running, that I just kind of got to experience for the first time there. And then from there, I got to have an entirely new experience of just being out of my depth at Worlds and just seeing what I could do. And those are both really valuable experiences. So I feel like I did a lot of learning that summer.
So you said that a lot of your team is are middle distance runners, including yourself. So what is your preparation like for the 8K, which is literally 1,000 times more than your best event, versus for the 800? Like when you're training for cross country, is the focus, hey, I want to peak for the 800 later in the year? Or is it like, we're still going to get the most out of this XC season? Like, how does that work for you?
So yes, it's a bit of both. Our coach, Terry, very much wants us to be in shape for our 600s and our 1Ks in February, March. But he doesn't necessarily put as much pressure on us to be super sharp in the early indoor season because of cross country. But the way we use cross country is almost like a base season with a very short period of sharpening up before our final meets, our conferences and our nationals, and then we move right into starting shorter stuff right away. So we usually will do, we call every long workout a tempo. We don't use the right terminology. I don't think I've ever actually done a tempo in my life. I don't know what actual pace they are, but we call them all tempos. So we do 3 tempos a week on Monday, Thursday, and Saturday. And Saturday is usually a long continuous effort. And then so more of a progression run. And then every other workout is intervals somewhere between 800 meters and up to 5K, which would be like just one interval probably. But we usually are training at around 9K of distance for 8K. We don't do much more volume than that. just over 8K or up to 9K of intervals, plus obviously warm up, cool down, and jog rest on our intervals. So we don't go quite as high mileage as I know some other teams do to get prepared for cross country, but that's because we're always mindful of the fact that it's a sharp step down immediately after for most of us. So the week after cross country, we take a short break, and then we always do 400s as our first workout after, and it is excruciating because you cannot hit an 85-second 400 for the life of you. And you know in 2 weeks, they're going to feel so easy. But at that time, it is awful. And it's one of those things where you just kind of have to throw your body into it and wait for it to adapt. So that's kind of how we step down from the 8K to the 800, is just go straight into more 800 specific workouts and feel kind of awful for a few weeks until your running legs get back. And it doesn't feel great, but it works surprisingly well considering.
So what is your weekly mileage like, or kilometer?
Yes, I don't know anything about miles. I run, actually, I kind of do. I think I run about 45-ish miles a week right now. That's kind of on the higher end. I'm going to switch to kilometers now. So I maybe run about, at the peak of cross country season, I would say we're maybe at, some of us are at maybe 90K a week. But that is truly the highest mileage I've ever been. And I only really hit that in the last year. In track season, I do actually like to do a little bit higher mileage and more aerobic type workouts. I just feel like that's the thing I always have to work on more so than the speed. But the mileage definitely drops to around 60K. We're a pretty low mileage team overall. Because we don't do the Sunday long runs. We have 3 equal distance runs a week, or similar distance. There's not, we don't do our runs by mileage. We actually do our runs by time. So we'll have like a 60-minute run 3 times a week, or 2 times a week plus a 90-minute cross train, something like that, instead of going on a longer run. So that definitely drops the mileage, especially because instead of doing that longer run, we're doing a workout which is already shorter mileage than even just a normal off day run would be. But yeah, I've definitely progressed in my mileage, especially my cross training mileage. I'm a big fan of the elliptical and pool running. I had a stress reaction throughout my first year that started in cross country season and continued right up until after Pan Ams. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where it would show up and then it would go away and then it would come back and then it would go away. So we were always monitoring that. So I was doing a lot of cross training. And since then, I've always been a big fan of the elliptical. So the biggest thing right now is seeing how many days in a row my body can actually run without breaking. Because I've never run this much, I don't think.
So you ran your PR 800 on a stress reaction?
I believe so.
Wow. Were you in pain during the race?
No, I have a weirdly high pain tolerance. I don't feel shin splints until my leg is broken. So no. The first time I ever felt my shin, I got an MRI the next week and it was already a stress reaction. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't run in that week. So we managed it very well. My coach would never run me if I was hurting. So I didn't do the relay at Nationals that year, our 4x800 relay, which is the only time you get to run an 800 in the Canadian system, is the 4x8. So that's usually the most fun event. And I didn't get to do it because we were trying to conserve my shin. I was entirely cross training. I wasn't doing any mileage running. So we just had to be very cautious with it. And if it was ever hurting during a workout, you know, get on the bike, get on the elliptical and finish the workout there. And that's how we got through that season. was just like every single day making sure that I wasn't experiencing any pain, wasn't making anything worse. And so immediately after that season, I took a very long time off and then just built back up. And I haven't been feeling I haven't felt my shin since, but I'm always cautious. We're always worried, especially when we transition to the indoor track. There's always a few weeks where anyone who's ever had any sort of stress injury is doing half of their workouts on the elliptical because the indoor track's just so hard on your body.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So you still have 1 year left of eligibility for the University of Toronto. Heading into that final year, what would be like the icing on the cake for you? Like, what sort of legacy do you want to live out and leave behind?
I haven't really thought about that one. I honestly, I had pneumonia for the entirety of my second and about half of my third year. Wow. So there was a very long period where I couldn't run. I did not compete outdoors either of those years. I was pulling together seasons out of my butt and just kind of running when I had to at meets, but not putting together a season that I could really be proud of. So my only hope coming out of next year is that by the end of next outdoor season, I'll have finally run a race where I felt like myself. And the only thing I can hope to leave behind is just continuing the really supportive and really positive culture on the team. I hope that that continues, because I think it's such an asset to our team that everyone is really, truly friends on the team and that everyone has each other's back and supports each other no matter what. And I just hope that that is something that I can, you know, help to instill in the younger athletes. Because I think it's the thing that makes our team work, is that we all trust each other, we all work together, and we all really like value each other as people as well as teammates. But yeah, the one thing about our team that makes it kind of special is that we also have a post-collegiate group that still runs with us. So people never really leave. So we have this kind of long list of people who've been here for a long time. And so the culture is kind of continuous. There's a lot of, you know, sharing of knowledge that happens. So even after I'm done at U of T, I'll probably still be here for some time. And that'll be, I'm excited for that, because it's a different experience to not be running varsity, to not be on quite such a compressed schedule. But I'm excited to make the most of this year, because I feel like every single varsity season there's been since first year, there's been something that, you know, it's either the injury or I've been, you know, sick the entire season and haven't really been training, but I'm racing anyways because, you know, nothing to lose. But I just hope that like this can be finally the year where I feel like I'm not getting to the end of a season feeling really deeply frustrated.
Well, I really wish that for you, because there's nothing like having a frustrating string of years and then being able to feel like yourself again as a runner. Like,
yeah,
it's
been a weird kind of benefit of this quarantine period, that it's given me a little bit of breathing room. I feel a little selfish saying this, but we were trying to put things together in time to have a decent outdoor season this year, but because I also had mono from in January, it was one of those things where it was like, okay, let's do as much as we can and then we'll just see how it goes and we'll hope it goes well. At least it'll be better than last year. But now having that taken away has been a little bit freeing in a way, because I know that I have time to build up that base to make next year a really good year. So I'm just really excited, because I think the entire team is kind of in that mindset. And so I think there might be a lot of great things coming out of next year because we'll all just have a little bit of time to get really excited about being back and competing and all of that. It's like one of the things I learned while being sick is how lucky I was to like be able to compete and be able to run and all of those things. And I feel like we're all kind of, the whole world is collectively getting that. And like within the running community, everyone's going to be so excited to train with their teammates again. It's going to be just like an electric environment. So I'm just really excited for that.
For sure. And yeah, there's something about just like trying to get to or get through that season that can really make you lose the fire. So having like that breathing room, that step away, really important.
Yeah, it's been really valuable. I've done a lot of like, you know, those types of runs where you're just alone with your thoughts, listening to the birds, and you feel like there's no pressure to be at any point in your training. And it's been a while since I felt that way. So it makes me excited for like what's to come.
Yeah, just get back to the core of why you started running in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what's happening to everyone now. Like we're all getting stripped down to like the bare bones, and then we just got to build back up from there.
So it sounds like you have the option and you are looking forward to continuing running in your club after college. What would, maybe this is a little too far away, but do you have any sort of visions or goals for post-collegiate you?
I like to take things one step at a time, I think, because I've had so many random setbacks. There was a long time where the only goal was to run a race. And so at this point, all I'm thinking about is putting together a season that I'm proud of, and I'll see what comes with that after next year. It's just one of those things that I haven't really thought about yet. It's, you know, all in the future, and, you know, I'm, regardless of even whether or not I run a time I'm proud of or not, I have this great training group and a great coach, and I know those resources will continue to be there for me after I graduate, which is really valuable to me. So I'm just going to see what happens. Our training group just keeps growing with amazing post-collegiate runners, especially like Ashley Taylor from NAU just started training with us, and we're just growing this group of really amazing post-collegiate middle distance runners, and I'm just excited to join that group regardless of what capacity I'm joining it in.
Yeah, the whole setup sounds like the recipe for success and enjoyment in the sport.
It's really, really great. Yeah. We've had our growing pains as more and more people have been added to the group, and as people have, you know, been figuring out where they stand within the whole training structure. But we are all fundamentally there to do the same thing, and that's like run fast and have fun. And our coach reminds us of that constantly, and we all remind each other of it constantly. And it's just such a positive environment that it's hard to not feel motivated and feel like anything is possible when you're in a group that's that supportive and that talented as well.
Yeah. How inspirational to see younger runners, older runners, like you have the whole a couple of generations there.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, when I was in grade 9, so my freshman year of high school, was when Gabriella won Officer Cross. And that was kind of a breakout moment where everything started for her. And since then, I mean, you look at her now, she has like 8 Canadian records. She's so insanely talented. We've all known that for years. But when you grow up training with someone like that, it's an amazing inspiration. And it's not just her. I mean, every single person in my training group is an inspiration to me, like every single day. So it's really, really wonderful. it's just a really wonderful environment to have grown up in and to continue to be in, and to know that that's going to be there for me is just really wonderful. It's like a great thing to be excited for after college. But right now I'm just excited for the college season, if we have one. And I'm really excited to get out there with my girls in our matching ribbons and kick some butt. So I don't know.
Yeah. And I feel like I used to have some barrier for me of thinking that elite runners were superhuman or something. So it sounds like it also makes that high level, like Olympic Canadian record breaking success seem possible.
It does. And it's when you see someone grow into that from a quite young age, it's one of those things that I think everyone who's grown up in my training group, and a lot of us are still here at the University of Toronto, would say that watching people like that develop is, it gives you so much, yeah, it gives you so much hope and so much, like, you feel like you have all this space to exist in that you would have never thought you could exist in if you didn't have those people to look up to and to watch become who they are today. So yeah, it's wonderful to be able to see someone who does things that are quite frankly superhuman as a human being. And, you know, to see them when they're injured, when they're at their best, when they're shooting a snot rocket, like at the track, it's like all of those things. And there are just so many people that just remind you that that's possible for like every single one of us. And yeah, it's really valuable. It's been a great place to grow up.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I'm like, the US needs to, needs to take some lessons here.
Yeah. I think that the way the training system works here is actually really great. The way that you join a club and you can train with older girls and younger girls and all of that, I think is actually a really good system. It takes away from the strength of the like identity with the collegiate team though. So that's the one thing, because people do go home for outdoor track. People go home to their home club sometimes and don't even train with their collegiate team. Some people stay, but it depends. So it's a very different culture. It's a very different emphasis. And it does make, for some people, I think the school identity less salient, but it hasn't for me. I think partially because my team, my club and my school team are the same.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it is a really good system. I mean, I think that there's definitely a lot of things that high schoolers can learn from collegiate runners and collegiate runners can learn from post-collegiate runners. And I think it's good for those types of people to interact and not just like be in their own bubble.
For sure. From my experience running Division III, it sounds like that this system could potentially be less accessible for the people that don't want running to be like a huge source of their identity. Maybe. I don't know if that's
your system, the American system or Canadian.
The Canadian.
Yeah, it does depend, because the thing with club track, there are people of all levels of identification with track as part of their identity. Like even at the high levels, like I would say that I see myself less as a track athlete first than I think some of my like American peers do, because there is less of an emphasis on you being an athlete in school as well. So it's a bit of like, yeah, you have to like stay in your club and pay your club dues. And that's kind of, I guess, a bigger burden. But then there's also like, when you're in school, there's less of an emphasis on like your social group being just the team. So I don't know. I feel like they always say to us, you're a student first, and they really mean it. U of T is like an academic institution, and like you're on the team, but you're not at U of T to run. You're at U of T to study. And like, that's definitely drilled into us. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I really enjoyed hearing you speak about it and learning more about it. I definitely want to look more into the Canadian system. So is the reason I run the 8K because is that the same distance the men run?
No. So originally, the men still run 10K, but originally what was going to happen is the women were going to also go up to 10K.
Oh, wow.
This is a slight controversy. So I'm not a coach. So basically what happened is apparently there was a coaches meeting where they talked about this. And then they pulled the athletes, and the athletes didn't want to go up any distance from the 6K. But there was a push from a few coaches to make the distances, like, to have distance parity. So they wanted us to all run 10K. So they were moving the girls up to 8K, and then they were going to move it up to 10K. But everyone lost it, and so they're not moving it up.
Yeah, because I know there has been some conversation in the NCAA, but nothing has been, like, really seriously
considered. Yeah.
So
I think 6K cross is my, like, max. Like, once you get past that, like, it's not my wheelhouse. It just really isn't. And there are some girls who love it and who would be amazing at 10K cross, but I just think it reduces the number of people who can actually, like, reasonably compete at the sport. And there's not that many people in Canada. So I feel like making it there be more of a barrier to competing, it doesn't make sense to me personally, because I think that, like, as much as it's amazing to see these amazing 10K runners do a 10K, but I think you're losing out on so much community, and there's hundreds of girls who could potentially do a 6K who probably won't do a 10K.
Yeah.
And I think they should be given the opportunity to race.
Yeah, I know, because that's, like, the cool thing is then if you are doing just the 6K, then the people that run the, like, middle distance or shorter or, like, longer sprint type races are more apt to then be able to do cross country.
Absolutely. And I think it's valuable for their training and for, like, your mental, you know, fortitude to do cross country. I think it's really valuable. And, you know, if we're training 10K, a long sprinter is not going to want to do any of our training. So that just cuts them off from, like, what could be an amazing base and might help them move up from the 400 to the 800 or something like that.
For sure.
So, yeah.
Jazz, I'm really glad that my running stalking pays off and that I find random cool people like yourself that I
get. This was so fun. Thank you for finding me.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad. Like, I definitely don't always have luck with reaching out to random people, so it's nice to get some reception. So my final question is, what is a piece of advice that you would tell to a younger version of yourself? And what is a message that you want to leave for a future version of yourself?
I would definitely tell my younger self to not take everything so seriously. I think I took the wrong things seriously. I can get very anxious. So, you know, just, like, reminding myself that I'm exactly where I need to be. To my younger self, and probably also to my older self. I don't think that much has changed, but I want to also remind my older self just to keep having fun, because I think, especially with running, as you get older, there's more pressure to perform and to, you know, show those results. And the thing that got me into running was just, like, really having fun beating some boys around an asphalt track in my elementary school. And I just, like, want to make sure I remember that and, like, don't get too caught up in, like, how fast I can run in circles. Cause it's, like, at the end of the day, that's all you're doing. And what you take away from it is, like, meeting cool people like yourself and, like, making friendships and all that stuff. And, like, as much as something seems like the end of the world when you're 20 or 24, it's probably not. And that's just something I always have to remind myself, no matter what age I am.
It's all about perspective, and it sounds like you'll be a great mentor to the younger girls on your club.
That's the hope. That's the only goal.
Hey everyone. Thank you so much for listening to episode 15 with Jazz. Not to choose favorites, but probably one of my favorite episodes. Don't forget to check out the resources in the description of this episode. Donate if you can. Educate yourselves. Leave a rating and review for this podcast if you enjoyed it. And yeah, come back out next week for another episode. Thank you. Take care.